In our last class on Wednesday, we saw how the Lord was about to take up Elijah, take him up by a whirlwind. And, you know, what did we see? I mean, just think about this. We saw something going on here as far as Elisha. So, you know, Elijah was supposed to be taken up, but then you have Elisha. He's not going to leave his side. You know, Elisha responds at least three different times. He says, as the Lord lives and as you yourself live, I will not leave you. And we also noted that they were in Bethel and then they were in Jericho, and that the sons of prophets, of the prophets in both these towns, said, do you know that the Lord will take away your master from over you today? And they were saying this to Elisha. And they knew that Elijah was going to be taken or taken away. As far as how much they knew, I don't know, because we'll see more in verse 16 where there were maybe some confusion about what all that meant or where he was going. But we also saw how Elisha responds in both of these instances. He answered, yes, I know, be still. So he knew, but either he didn't want it to happen or he wasn't ready for that to happen. But he says, yes, I know, be still. So the Lord tells Elijah, or sends Elijah, to the Jordan. And that's where we'll pick up today. We're going to start in 2 Kings chapter 2. If you'll turn over to 2 Kings chapter 2. We're going to start in verse 6. Says, then Elijah said to him, please stay here. You know, Elijah talking to Elisha. Please stay here, for the Lord has sent me to the Jordan. And he said, as we stated, as the Lord lives, and as you yourself live, I will not leave you. So the two of them went on. Then you have verse 7. It says, now 50 men of the sons of the prophets went and stood opposite them at a distance while the two of them stood by the Jordan. And you, so note that you have these 50 and they're staying, they're across at a distance, but they're watching. You know, because there, something's about to take place. And then we see that Elijah took his mantle and he folded it together. So as if he's preparing something. You know, he folds his mantle together. And he struck the waters and they were divided here and there so that the two of them crossed over on dry ground. I put a question on the material. It says, Elijah asks Elisha what he can do for him before he is taken up. Because he's about to be taken up. So what does he ask him? Okay, so he asks for a double portion of his spirit to be upon him. And then we see in verse 9, it says that now it came about when they crossed over that Elisha said to Elisha, ask what shall I do for you, like what you said. And then he asked for the double portion. And then he said, You have asked a hard thing. Nevertheless, if you see me when I am taken from you, it shall be so for you. But if not, it shall not be so." So does Elisha see Elijah taken up? Yes, he does. Yes, he does. Verse 11 says, "Then it came about, as they were going along and talking, that behold, there appeared a chariot of fire and horses of fire, which separated the two of them. And Elijah went up by a whirlwind to heaven. And Elisha saw it and cried out, 'My father, my father, the chariots of Israel and its horsemen.' And he saw him no more. Then he took hold of his own clothes and tore them into two pieces." In the next section, or right after this, what was taken? Or what did Elisha take up that fell from Elijah? His mantle. So he picks up, he takes his mantle. And then let's note verse 14. It says, "He took the mantle of Elijah and fell from him and struck the waters and said, 'Where is the Lord, the God of Elijah?' And when he also had struck the waters, they were divided here and there, and Elisha crossed over." So he strikes the waters and he asks, "Where is the Lord of Elijah?" And the waters part. So who parted those waters? The Lord did. That's right. The Lord parted those waters. Mm-hmm. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. I would agree with that. Because all of this, and in all the different examples, we see that all of this taking place is they're showing that they are a prophet of the Lord. And then the Lord is making all these things happen. In verse 15, I mean, note the response. Verse 15, "Now when the sons of the prophets who were at Jericho opposite him saw him, they said," because remember, it started off, you had these 50 that were across from a distance and they were watching to see what was going to take place because they knew something was about to take place. "And they said, 'The spirit of Elijah rests on Elisha.' And they came to meet him and bowed themselves to the ground before him." So they knew that that Elisha was a prophet of God. "They said to him, 'Behold, now there are with your servants 50 strong men. Please let them go.'" And this little piece here is what I was referring to. They knew that Elijah was going to be taken up, but there's some sense of confusion of maybe where he was going. We know that he was taken up to heaven. But it said in verse 16, "They said to him, 'Behold, now there are with you servants 50 strong men. Please let them go and search for your master. Perhaps the spirit of the Lord has taken him up and cast him on some mountain or into some valley.'" And then Elisha says, you shall not send. There's no reason to send them." But when they kept urging him, it says that they urged him until he was ashamed. He said, "Send." He says, "Go ahead, send them." And they sent the 50 men, and they searched 3 days, but did not find him. They returned to him while he was staying at Jericho, and He said to them, "Did I not say to you, do not go?" Point being, I mean, because he did at one point say, "Yes, go." But the point being was, at first, I mean, he knew there was no reason for them to go. And when we, in verse 19 and following, basically we're just going to see about Elisha now. We're not going to see any more about Elijah. Let's read verse 19. So then the men of the city said to Elisha, "Behold, now the situation of the city is pleasant, as my Lord sees, but the water is bad and the land is unfruitful." He said, "Bring me a new jar and put salt in it." So they brought it to him. He went out to the spirit of the water and threw salt in it and said, "Thus says the Lord, I have purified these waters. There shall not be from there death or unfruitfulness any longer." So the waters have been purified to this day according to the word of Elisha, which he spoke. Then he went up to Bethel from there to Bethel, and he was going up by the way, and the young lads came out. Well, we're not going to get into that part of it. But we see that he purifies the waters, showing who he is. And then we see some of the travels where it talked about he went to Bethel, Mount Carmel, to Samaria. And then when we get into chapter 3, it's going to talk about some kings again. It's going to start talking about some of the kings. But it will also talk about Elisha's interaction or his involvement with these kings. We see that the Lord is with Elisha as he was with Elijah. In 2 Kings chapter 3, 2 Kings chapter 3, verse 1, says, "Now Jehoram, the son of Ahab, became king over Israel at Samaria in the 18th year of Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, and reigned 12 years." So again, you know, if you're filling out that chart, there's some details we can put on your chart concerning Jehoram. And, concerning Jehoram. So, we see here that it states that he became king over Israel at Samaria in the 18th year of Jehoshaphat. Remember, when we've been going over some of these, since we're kind of going in order in the books, you're going to have some time changes and things like that, just because of sometimes it might be talking about one king over here and then the king from the other kingdom over there. So you have some things like that. Because in our last class, we were talking about Jehoshaphat, that he had died. So you have to keep that in mind. You pick him back up some, you're having a little bit of time differences. Well, not differences, but you're kind of going back in time because it's in a thought on a different king. But we're talking around 852 B.C. Because if you remember, Jehoshaphat reigned 870 to 848, depending on how you state it. I know some say 873. And which would make sense for your 25-year reign. But I state 870 because I think possibility there was a time he reigned while Asa was still alive. Remember, Asa had the disease in his feet. So, and this, it's not super important. Just throwing some of that out there. But if you do the 870, you can look at the math, and that's going to put you about 852 of when we're talking about right now. So again, not super important. Just, I know some people are noting some of the dates and trying to follow some of that. So I'm going to throw out there. That's just kind of what I'm coming up with. So we see that Jehoram becomes king over Israel. Was he a good or a bad king? Evil. That's kind of an easy answer because he was king over Israel. So, but that's correct. He was evil king. Verse 2 says that he did evil in the sight of the Lord, but not like his father and mother did. So let's think about what that means. Remember that Ahab, the worst king, and his mother was wicked as well. So he didn't do as a father and mother did. It says that he put away the sacred pillar of Baal. And that was the evils, most of the evils that they were tied into. But it said that he didn't worship Baal, the god of his parents. But he does not give up the religion of Jeroboam. So he was still not doing as God would have him to. And then in the next section, you get to a part where it's talking about the king of Moab. And in 2 Kings 3:4, it says, "Now Mesha, the king of Moab, was a sheep breeder and used to pay the king of Israel 100,000 lambs and the wool of 100,000 rams. But when Ahab died, the king of Moab rebelled against the king of Israel. And King Jehoram went out to Samaria at that time and mustered all Israel. Then he went and sent word to Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah, saying, 'The king of Moab has rebelled against me. Will you go with me to fight against Moab?' And he said, 'I will go up. I am as you are, my people as your people, my horses as your horses.' He said, 'Which way shall we go up?' And he answered, 'The way of the wilderness of Edom.' So the king of Israel went with the king of Judah and the king of Edom, and they made a circuit of 7 days' journey, and there was no water for the army or for the cattle that followed them." So what does the king of Israel think might be taking place? What's happening here concerning this journey with these three kings? Right. So that's his concern. And he says, the king of Israel said, "Alas, for the Lord has called these three kings to give them into the hand of Moab." But let's remember, as Jehoshaphat has in the past, he's going to not assume anything. He wants to go to the source. He wants to get more information. So what does he ask? What does Jehoshaphat ask? Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. That's right. He said, "Is there not a prophet of the Lord here? And that we might inquire of the Lord by him." And one of the kings of Israel's servants answered and said, "Elisha, the son of Shaphat, is here." who used to pour water on the hands of Elijah. So Jehoshaphat wants to know if there's a prophet of God that they can speak to in order to see what the Lord has to say concerning this. And we've seen him do that in some of the past when we were looking at some other verses. So verse 12 says, "And Jehoshaphat said, the word of the Lord is with him. So the king of Israel and Jehoshaphat, the king of Edom, went down to him." And the king. Yes. Now Elisha said to the king of Israel, "What do I have to do with you? Go to the prophets of your father and to the prophets of your mother and to the king of Israel." And the king of Israel said to him, "No, for the Lord has called these three kings together to give them into the hand of Moab." And Elisha tells him, "As the Lord of hosts lives, before whom I stand, were it not that I regard the presence of Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah, I would not look at you nor see you." So Elisha tells Joram to go to the prophets of his father and mother. He knows that they did not follow the Lord. They did not trust in the Lord. And we just saw that in verse 2. And the statement it says there too, it said that if it were not for Jehoshaphat, if it were not for him, Elijah wouldn't even speak to him. He said, "Were it not that I regard the presence of Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah, I would not look at nor see you. I would pay no attention to you." But Jehoshaphat trusts in the Lord. And once again, we see him inquiring of the Lord concerning what is to take place. Then it says that he went to a minstrel and came about when the minstrel played that the hand of the Lord came upon him. And he said, "Thus says the Lord, make this valley full of trenches." So the Lord tells him to make this valley full of trenches. Why? Verse 17 says, "For," or "because." Says, "Thus says the Lord, you shall not see wind, nor shall you see rain. Yet the valley shall be filled with water, so that you shall drink, both you and your cattle and your beasts." Remember what we just read. They were making this journey, and there was no water for them, or for the army, or for the cattle. But verse 18 said that this is easy for the Lord. It said this, "And this is but a slight thing in the sight of the Lord. He shall also give the Moabites into your hand." So the Lord's going to provide for their needs and give the Moabites into their hands. Now they know that the Lord is with them in this.
Who do you normally go back to? Who do you always go back to? Who is never wrong?
Yeah.
This is just one of those things. If I hear it, obedience or disobedience. And so
yes, and that, and like Keith said, you know, because we do see this over and over, the idea of what's taking place, and these people are actually, they're there. They're seeing this. God is proving who He is and proving that these men, because we've had several different prophets we've talked about throughout this class, He's proven that these men are a mouthpiece of God. I mean, what they are saying is going to take place because of the God that they serve. And He's proven this over and over and over. And, you know, some of them don't get it or choose not to follow. And like he said, that's something we can think about for ourselves. We don't have prophets today. But what we have is the Word of God, and it's historical evidence. And we have the apostles and prophets in here, and all these records that tells us, you know, how God dealt with these people in the past. So what are we going to take from that? You know, that's what we need to think about. I mean, because it's, and plus we're thinking of it, we see way far back, and we see this over and over and over. And how, you know, people just aren't getting it. And some of it just, it depends. There's so many different reasons. And same today, you know, someone might want to believe to a point. It just depends on if it's going to get in the way of how they want to live. But we have to live how the Lord directs us to live. So, good point, Keith. Anybody else? Yes, sir. How we stand or feel about it. Yes, sir. Good point. Anybody else? Yes, ma'am. Anybody else? Okay. Let's go to verse 19. Verse 19, chapter 3. We'll read this short section here. Well, part of it. It says, "Then you shall strike every fortified city and every choice city, and fell every good tree, and stop all springs of water, and mar every good piece of land with stones. It happened in the morning about the time of the offering, offering the sacrifice, that behold, water came by the way of Edom, and the country was filled with water. Now all the Moabites heard that the kings had come up to fight against them, and all who were able to put on armor and older were summoned and stood on the border." They rose early in the morning, and the sun shone on the water, and the Moabites saw the water opposite them as red as blood. So it says that this water was red, or appeared to be red because of the way the sun shone on it. Nevertheless, we see how they took it, what they think of it. Then they said, "This is blood. The kings have surely fought together and they have slain one another." So they think, hey, these kings, they killed each other. And there's the bloody water. And what do they do next? They're like, to the spoil. You know, so they go down and take the spoils they're going to go down to take the spoils that are left. And remember what the Lord said, that He's going to give the Moabites into their hand. So verse 24 says, "But when they came to the camp of Israel, the Israelites arose and struck the Moabites, so that they fled before them, and they went forward into the land, slaughtering the Moabites. Thus they destroyed the cities, and each one threw a stone on every piece of good land and filled it. So they stopped all the springs of water and felled all good trees until in Kir-Hareseth, only they left it stones. However, the slingers went about it and struck it." When the king of Moab saw that the battle was too fierce for him, he took with him 700 men who drew swords to break through to the kingdom of Edom, or to the king of Edom, but they could not. So any questions or thoughts on this before we go into chapter 4? Excuse me. So we see in chapter 4, we're going to read of one of the wives of the sons of the prophets. It says in 4:1, "Now a certain woman of the wives of the sons of the prophets cried out to Elisha, 'Your servant, my husband, is dead. And you know that your servant feared the Lord, and the creditor has come to take my two children to be his slaves.'" So she's crying out to him because they're in debt, and she fears that they're going to take her children to be slaves. Verse 2 said, "Elisha said to her, 'What shall I do for you? Tell me what you have in the house.' And she said, 'Your maidservant has nothing in the house except a jar of oil.' Then he said, 'Go borrow vessels at large for yourself from all your neighbors, empty vessels. Do not get a few.'" So basically, go get as much of these vessels as you can get. So do not get a few. "And you shall go in and shut the door behind you, and your sons behind you and your sons, and pour out into all these vessels, and you shall set aside what is full." So she went from him and shut the door behind her and her sons. They were bringing the vessels to her, and she poured. When the vessels were full, she said to her sons, "Bring me another vessel." And they said to her, "There is not one vessel more." So then the oil stopped. So she fills up all these vessels and ends up with all of this oil. You know, she was doing what Elijah had instructed her to do. Then she came and told the man of God, and he said, "Go, sell the oil, pay your debt, and you and your sons shall live on the rest. So we see that Elisha helped solve this issue. But we, in verse 8, we read of something else going on. It says that, "Now there came a day when Elisha passed over to Shunem, where there was a prominent woman, and she persuaded him to eat food. And so it was, as often as he passed by, he turned in there to eat food. She said to her husband, 'Behold now, I perceive that this is a holy man of God passing by us continually. Please, let us make a little walled upper chamber and let us set a bed for him there and a table and a chair and a lampstand. And it shall be when he comes to us that he can turn in there.' One day he came there and turned in the upper chamber and rested. Then he said to Gehazi, his servant, 'Call the Shunammite.' And when he had called her, she stood before him. He said to him, 'Say now to her, Behold, you have been careful for us with all this care. What can I do for you? Would you be spoken of for the king or to the captain of the army?' And she answered, 'I live among my own people.' So he said, 'What then is to be done for her?' And Gehazi said, or answered, 'Truly, she has no son, and her husband is old.' He said, 'Call her.' When he had called her, she stood in the doorway. Then he said, 'At this season next year, you will embrace a son.' And she said, 'No, my Lord, O man of God, do not lie to your maidservant.'" The woman conceived and bore a son that season, the next year, as Elisha had said to her. So she's never had a son. So this man tells her, "Well, next season you're going to have one." So what kind of man can say something like that? And then it says that it came about. And as we know, as comments have already stated, it's not that Elisha did this. God does this. So, you know, again, over and over, God's proving who he is and that these men are his prophets. I put a question on the lesson. I said, what does the Shunammite woman do for Elisha? And we kind of read that, you know, she sets up a place for him to come when he's in town. This had a bed. This had a bed and a table and chair and a lampstand. So she provides a place for him to stop in when he was in town. And then I put on there also, and I've kind of already answered the question, what does Elisha do for her? So he gives her a son. You know, he had said, "At this season next year, you shall embrace a son." And she tells him, "No, my Lord, man of God, do not lie to your maidservant." Because she can't, not that she doesn't believe it, she's just like, you know, the idea this is something that she's been wanting. And so she conceived and bore a son. But then we see something happens to that son. It says, when the child was grown, the day came that he went out to his father to the reapers. He said to his father, "My head, my head." And he said to his servant, "Carry him home," or "carry him to his mother." So what ends up happening that causes this lady to go and find Elisha. Okay, so the son dies. Her son dies. So it says, when he had taken him up and brought him to his mother, he set on her lap until noon and then died. She went up and laid him on the bed of the man of God and shut the door behind him and went out. Then she called to her husband and said, please send me one of the servants and one of the donkeys that I may run to the man of God and return. And I'm about to get buzzed. So we will pick up here in our next class. Thank you all for your comments and your participation.